I'm Dina Del Bucchia.
And I'm Daniel Zamparelli.
And this is Can't Lit.
Can't Lit. Talk about books and stuff.
Hi, it's episode 34 of Can't Lit.
Is it really?
Yes.
Okay, good. I was a bit
worried. Was 34 last year.
Oh, my goodness.
Were you?
Yeah.
I was 34 2 years ago.
Oh.
What a great time that was.
I can't wait. Oh, no. My boyfriend's 34.
Whoa.
Oh, he just turned 34. Yeah. It's great. You just heard our wonderful guest, Vivek Shreya. Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good.
No one does enough voices on the podcast.
You got to do that voice
it.
For the rest of the podcast.
I'll just do the rest of the interview.
I do a really good Marcel Lachelle.
Okay.
Oh, go. Do it.
I was driving to the car and then I couldn't get in the bathtub and then I got lost and then the toilet paper wrapped me in my finger.
That's actually really
good. It's okay, right? It's pretty good.
I thought it was Marvin the Martian that you were going to do.
I don't know who that is, but I can also do,
"Hiya, Homer."
Oh, that's, you have such range.
And that one's close to Marvin the Martian, so that's why I feel like that's... These are all good. So you have to
thank
do
you.
Voices the entire time.
Okay.
I didn't know we were going to get this new side of you where you're an impressionist, but only for like animated characters. And Kristen Wiig.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's all good. It's all good. Who wants to tell us what's happening? Who wants to talk? Who wants to talk about themselves? Do you want to?
You just got off an airplane. I feel like you have to start us off.
Yeah, I just got off an airplane. True. I'm here in Vancouver because I'm playing a show tonight at the Cobalt.
Yeah.
You're playing a show at the Cobalt tonight and I did not know this?
I invited you on Facebook. I think part of the problem is it's not under my name. It's under To Attach. So people get invited and they don't know what it is.
What I'm doing tonight. And I was planning on going to bed.
Well, if you can come, that'd be great. If you can't, no pressure. Is the Cobalt close to you here?
The Cobalt's like 10 blocks down that way.
Oh, you have no excuse.
It's very close.
I'm friends with every single person who runs the Cobalt.
Oh, then you have to come.
DJ there once a month.
You have to come then.
Yeah.
And I can even text you the exact time we're going on. You should check out the whole event. It's an early show, so it's 7 to 11. We have to be out by 11.
Okay. That's probably why
our meeting will be done.
The Cobalt sends me those invites every 3 seconds.
Right.
So just like another show.
Right.
Damn. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So I'm in a band with my brother, Too Attached, and he lives here in Vancouver. So this is our first Vancouver show, actually.
Cool.
Yeah. That's what's new with me. What's
that's
new with
so
you?
So great. Wait. No, I have more questions.
Enough. Okay.
Are you doing more touring?
Yes. So we played our first show in Toronto at Lee's Palace in April.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Lee's Palace. That's
awesome. It's like
awesome.
Our first gig together.
So
I mean,
good.
We've been playing music for a while. My brother's like open for Method Man and, I've done some touring myself. But this is a new project for us where we're like joining forces and it's kind of like starting afresh for both of us. I think we've both had music careers that have been kind of long and hard and challenging. Yeah, this feels like a fresh start. And then we're playing Edmonton, which is like our hometown next week, which I'm excited about. And then my brother's coming in for Pride, Toronto Pride.
Oh, great.
And we're going to play a show outside, like one of those big like outdoor stages.
Oh, that's the best. Oh, yeah, because you are, what's the word again?
I'm the Grand Marshal.
Grand Marshal
of Toronto Pride.
Apparently.
Yeah.
That's so great.
How did that work? Did it's like...
I will tell you how it worked.
Okay, great.
A friend texts me, "Can I tell her that she's the Grand Marshal?" Oh, fuck. I wasn't supposed to send you this text. And I'm like in bed. I don't know what's happening. Then I get a message on Facebook saying, "Would you like to be our Grand Marshal?" And then I'm like, oh my God. Like, is this like a, like, you know, when someone gets the wrong number, I was like, did someone like, it just like, it's not something you apply for. It's not like, you know, like an award or something where you submit. Yeah. So they have a selection committee. They contacted me. So the first thing I do is text a friend of mine who's like older and has been around in Toronto for a while. And I'm like, what does a Grand Marshal do? Like, what is a Grand Marshal? And they were like, well, basically you're the Queen of Pride. And I was like, okay. I think I can manage that.
Yeah.
That's the best thing to me.
Oh.
Yeah. It's pretty funny, especially because in past years I have, my relationship to Pride has changed over the past couple of years. And in recent years, I'm just not a crowd person. I'm not a heat person. So I've often like left, So that's part of why I thought they got the wrong person. But all of my friends, the first thing that they said was like, ha ha, you have to be in town this year. Oh, I also find Pride kind of like, I don't know if it's like this here. Yours is in August, right?
Yeah.
But I kind of find it like queer New Year's where there's like so much pressure. Like so much pressure to do the right things on the right days. And there's like 101 events and everyone, like some eventually you have a breakdown and you feel like, it's just like very emotional and sometimes
but like for 4 days, like not just like one
exactly
day of New Year's,
exactly
4 days of it
exactly, and like every one of your friends wants to do different things and no one wants to put pressure on each other, and so anyways,
and everyone's also kind of the worst where they're like, well, that party's not going to be good, we have to go to this one. You're
exactly
like, they're all going to be the same.
Exactly.
I'm going to be sleepy in the corner and I don't want to go.
The best part is going to be the pre-drinking,
yeah,
where we listen to Beyonce at home.
Yeah.
I also, like all of my friends, tend to identify as women, and at Pride there tend to be these like women only parties. Oh. And so like historically I haven't, it's like those are the parties I want to go to and I historically haven't gone to. So anyway, and I mean, I respect the need for those spaces obviously. Yep. And this year I could go, but anyways, I'm rambling.
No.
You're going to edit
all
this,
good,
right?
Rambling.
So you're just...
Maybe edit some stuff. Who knows what'll happen?
Rambling.
Okay.
Yeah. Rambling is one of the most important parts of this particular podcast.
When is Toronto Pride?
It is. Well, Toronto is doing what they're calling Pride Month this year. So Pride Month started.
A whole month of
it. It's already happening right now.
June 1st. And, but the actual march is on the 3rd. And my brother and I are playing, on the 2nd.
Okay. Of July.
Of July.
Okay.
Yeah. So they timed it around. They moved it. So that it's closer to Canada.
So it's
Day.
On the like long weekend.
Exactly. Because everyone's like tends to be like hungover the next day anyways. If Canada Day falls on like a Monday. So.
That's why Pride is when it is.
Right.
Here.
The long weekend.
Because of the long weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I'm already not looking forward to it. Because I always agree to DJ every year.
Right.
And then I'm like, and it's on the Sunday. So it's like after 3 days of like being on patios, like this is like truly a privilege of like having so much fun and like being out and drinking, but then like the Sunday comes and like everyone who shows up to the party is like, a lot of people do drugs around the like right. that weekend, and they come in and they and I DJ hip hop and they don't want to hear hip hop.
Oh no.
Some do,
then they're like, not allowed to come.
Well, yeah, but they show up because they're like, oh, it'll be a fun party. And then they're like, oh, they're like, they're a bit strung out. So like people like leave super early, but I still have to DJ till like 3 a.m. So then by like 1 a.m. on the Sunday, I'm playing like a Jeremiah and Brandy and like the
Perfect.
Slowest jams to get them to fall asleep.
Perfect. What's your favorite last jam to play?
I play.
Top three. Tell me your top three and I'll tell you my top three.
Okay. Usher Nice and Slow.
Okay. That's a good one.
Jeremiah, Fuck You All the Time.
Okay.
And then Jeff is the other DJ I DJ with, and he plays a slew of Erykah Badu.
Oh.
But it's Tyrone that's our favorite.
Oh, nice. I really like to play Love in the Club by Usher.
Okay,
because
yeah.
you can't really dance to it, but everyone just like gets so happy when you hear it. So it's like nice and slow.
Yeah.
I really like to play Turn the Lights Down Low by Lauryn Hill
and
Bob Marley. That's a nice... And you know what one people fucking love is Waterfalls. I love playing Waterfalls as like the last track.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Those are all good choices.
Oh, and
good job,
Frank
everyone.
Ocean, Thinking About You.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
That one,
yeah.
Like.
Daniel, you didn't mention the other part of your DJing when people come up to you and continually
request
songs that you're never going to play. So what do you tell them?
I am... The meanest DJ ever.
Oh, tell me, give me tips.
Like, I read that you're the best.
I read that you're not hypersensitive, and I was so jealous yesterday. I'm like, what would that life look like to not be hypersensitive? So teach me how to be mean when people ask for requests when you DJ.
Usually, I try to be nice because I'm like, I used to, like, when I was really young, I used to do, try and get requests in. I mean, like, rarely, but, I get it. And sometimes I know that the, like... If it's a young gay boy, I like in sense sometimes that they're just flirting.
Right.
But if I get really bad requests, then I go, I don't know. Sometimes I'll be like, do you know which party you're at? And because
do you know where you are?
One girl requested Gautier.
New phone. Who dis?
Gautier.
Oh, wow.
And I was like,
that's my favorite story.
And I had to
was
be like,
was that you?
No, I just love
no,
this.
No, and she came up and she's like, can I get Doce? And I was like,
in disguise.
This is a hip hop party. And she's like, well, you know what? Everyone loves that song. I'm like, great.
I will say about Gautier, that's actually a really good record.
I guess, like,
it's legitimately a really, really good record. And it's kind of sad almost because that song became so massive that I feel like that record,
it dominated,
like,
everything else.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I remember listening to a couple other songs on that album being like, this is pretty good.
Yeah. And that song is not a pop song. Like, it's kind of an anomaly. I mean, this is going off.
No, totally. It's fine.
But like,
this is how we work.
It kind of surprises me that that song was so successful. I think kind of because it got memed a lot. But like, when you listen to that song on its own, it's like, why was this song a pop hit?
I can say personally, that song was the song my ex was like, I heard it and I thought about us, and I was like, that makes me want to burn this song down.
Right, fair.
It makes me want to go to his house right now.
Let's go.
Take a shit in a bag, leave it outside, set it on fire.
He's fine.
That's, I know he is, but I, those kind of, I just can't, can't with that.
But yeah, so she, and then she also, from the girl who requested that song, I went and then explained to her why it was important to listen to hip hop in queer spaces and listen to queer hip hop artists. And I went into a long rant just so I, because we don't have, hip hop's not popular in Vancouver, and specifically in the queer community, it's not popular at all. Like, there's...
Can I ask you a question? You can edit this out.
Yeah, go for it.
Has anyone talked to you about being white playing hip-hop? Like, do you wrestle with that at all? I wrestle with it a lot.
I do.
Like,
I do.
Person.
I do. But I, like... And the people I discuss it with, who the people who kind of calm me down the most about it, are actually, like, queer black men.
Oh, interesting.
So it's like... When I've wrestled with it so much, I've even changed my DJ name because it was That's a Raven, and I felt weird about that. And me and a friend discussed it, and she was like, yeah, you need to change the name. So I changed it, and then I stopped playing. And what ended up happening is there was nobody playing hip-hop in queer spaces.
Yep.
So it's just like, if somebody would happily take that space up, that would be great. No one did, and no one... would. And even my friends, who I was like, well, like, why don't you do, they're like, I'm not gonna DJ, I don't know how to DJ. And so then after that, I was like, well, it's like better to have people enjoying the music versus not.
Yep.
And that's how I wrestled with it.
Fair. Sorry,
but I still wrestle with it, and it's still like a conversation.
You
I
haven't
have all
pinned
the time.
It to the mat.
Yeah. And I don't think I'm supposed to.
No, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Shit got serious.
No, that's good. My, I think about this a lot because I know that you listen to a lot of like rap and hip hop, and when you were growing up, but I always associated it with just like super terrifying rednecks. So it took me a long time because I grew up in a small town, and like the people
the
that listened
to hip-hop?
They just, yeah, they listened to tons of rap. Like,
white,
I can always imagine, like,
listen to rap, like,
oh, yeah,
most.
Imagine like a
so
big white guy driving a huge truck listening to
Eminem,
like NWA or whatever.
Oh shit.
Yeah, just imagine that. And then and you're just like, oh, this is so day rapey, and everything was yeah. so scary and weird, and just older hyper aggressive white guys. So it took me a long time to like move to the city, be around other people, and be like, oh, people who are not scary to me listen to types of music that might be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I left it for a long time because of like, there was so much homophobic stuff in it. And it was like,
yeah,
it felt like the people who would threaten me with violence were replicating yes. the same lyrics.
Oh, wow.
Exactly.
And so it just kind of, at a certain point, felt very unsafe.
Yeah, like men using the word bitches, like white dudes in big trucks.
Yeah.
Just like, that seems really uncool behavior.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going on.
I mean, I talked about this at the reading, but like for me, hip hop and R&B, especially 90s R&B, was like an entry point into Western music. So like grunge was sort of happening at the same time. And like, I didn't understand grunge. Like, just, it was like loud and noisy. But there was something about like 90s R&B that felt very like oddly reminiscent of like Indian music, because Indian music is like about hitting like all the notes, you know, it's like, and you know, it's like about a certain devotional quality. And like, I mean, Boys to Men songs are like, what are they if they're not devotional? Right. Like, right. And it is about hitting all these notes. So like in a way, really beautifully. So for me, like, yeah, it's kind of the opposite where like hip hop and R&B like allowed me to enter into to Western music.
Right. But I think there's a, I do feel like there's a difference between like R&B and hip hop and rap.
For sure.
Oh, for like, sure.
R&B, I feel no, like R&B is my true love of like music. Like yeah. that I could listen to 24/7. Like I was so happy when there was like all of a sudden a resurgence of 90s and R&B like aesthetic of like, I can never pronounce the names properly, but Jhené Aiko and Tinashe and Jeremih and like Party Next Door, and it was just like some like The Weeknd, and some of those are still quite misogynistic, but it, there's something about that music that I don't know. It just like has always won me over, and I was so happy when it returned because I was like, cool, I'm cool again by liking this music.
Yeah, no, at our school, the people that were cool listened to grunge. So the fact that I listened to Salt-N-Pepa, they were like it wasn't cool, you know? But it's interesting. I've talked to other kids in Edmonton who grew up in around the same time as me, and it's like different schools had different, like different things were different, like cool in different schools.
Right.
Cools and schools.
I feel like it went from in our school, like everyone kind of listening to Salt-N-Pepa, and then this branching off of like people listening to grunge or people just still listening to AC/DC. Cause of course that was happening. People were driving in big trucks. Naturally they could not get enough. But then, yeah. And then sort of people branching off. Yeah. Into like being super into rap music. And I don't know what any of it means. I just wanted to make weird videos with my friends and not get threatened in the mall to get beat up.
Right.
That only happened one time.
Fair. Fair.
Speaking of the mall.
Yeah.
Nina, what's happening?
Have not been to the mall in a while. The Winita Plaza Mall in Trail, BC. No. What's happening with me this week? I have been feeling 15 again, but only in the uterus.
Oh, cool.
And I've been having a super intense, like horrible. I'm going to talk about menstruation, everyone.
Great.
It's fucking terrible.
Your vagina's going 30 on 13?
Yeah. I wished on a Zoltar machine and then my uterus went back in time and became super young again.
Mark
I
was like, oh, in it now.
I wish I was young again. Yeah. And then it just, yeah. He's actually inside of it,
That's what
rolling
I was imagining.
Around. Yeah.
Trying to crawl out.
He's trying to get out. Has anyone seen the movie Inner Space? It was also from the 80s where someone got shrunk down and then got injected into Martin Short's body.
Whoa.
Anyway, cool 80s comedies. So that's what's happening to me. But I just have felt so terrible. I described it as burning rats trying to escape my body. Because that's how much pain I was in. And I was just like bloated and swollen like a beached whale. I haven't been eating anything but ice cream because it's the only thing that felt okay.
Why are we here? Why are we doing this?
Today I'm fine. But it was, yeah, like earlier in the week I was such a nightmare.
She does better when she has like activities to distract her.
Oh, yeah. I need activities. Behalf. Yeah. I do
that
need activities.
Husbandly.
Yeah. Yeah.
She does better when.
This is why people still ask if we're married.
Yeah.
And we're like, sort of. I don't even know.
Yes, maybe.
Whatever. Yeah.
Do you guys ever fight?
Have we fought before?
We get in arguments, I guess. We've never
What's
had
the worst
a big fight
you've ever had?
Oh, I can't even think. No big fights.
Really?
I don't think.
No.
Are you both avoid conflict? Is that?
No.
No.
I don't think there's been like a reason to fight.
Yeah. So far, no big reasons.
But you're not new friends.
Nope.
Like 5 years.
Yeah.
Going on.
And there's never been a reason.
I'm trying to think.
You never get annoyed with each other.
I mean, sometimes I get annoyed with things, but yeah. Like
we've gone on long tours together. So it's like we have to irritate each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're in the same room taking up each other's space.
I farted on you so many times.
Did she really?
She didn't fart on me.
No, not intentionally.
She did fart bomb the bed a couple times.
I couldn't help it.
I don't know. I think we have the same.
It was a king size bed.
Personality and the same response to being irritated, where it's just like we go and be with ourselves when we're irritated until it's like over.
Yeah.
And we usually just kind of drink a lot.
Yeah. And we talk about so many things that I think that overall things get worked out or
nothing really
disgusting.
Like, yeah, nothing yeah. really stays inside because it's like there's constant yeah. talking.
I feel like that with my other close friends where I just have never really gotten in big fights with them because we're just always talking about everything and no one's.
Is anyone jealous of your relationship? Like, yes. Are your friends
probably
jealous?
Probably yes.
Yeah.
Have people articulated that?
Yes.
And what do you say?
I love you too.
I just say that everyone has different relationships with different people.
That's exactly how I feel. I'm just like, everyone can't be, you know,
rom-com.
Everyone can't be rom-com. That's a great point.
But I feel like everyone kind of has their rom-com person. And if they don't, like,
I think that like creates more jealousy if you don't have that type of closeness.
I mean, you have a rom-commer.
You've got a rom-com.
Yeah,
I've got some rom-coms.
I'm very fortunate.
Yeah.
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 And I feel like if you don't have, I feel like people need to spend more time trying to find not necessarily a love relationship, but like a bestie relationship. And I think those are more satisfying. And we've been seeing things like that pop up, like those articles about Broad City and all that stuff.
Yeah. Like super deep platonic relationships with people that
you can fart
you
with.
Also, and would want to, you know, spend the rest of your life with within a friend style relationship.
You want to spend the rest of your life with Daniel?
I do. And I also, my other friend, Roxanne, I talk about her all the time as we call each other our life partners all the time. I've known her since 1998.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I was in high school.
Yeah. We were just in university.
Whoa. Yep. You were in the womb.
No.
You were in elementary school?
I was in elementary school.
No.
You must have been Mark Ruffalo in someone's womb.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were swimming around. I love how this conversation came out of my uterus. I gave birth to this conversation.
Well,
being fertile is disgusting.
What's the... There was an article that came out about the like level of pain that cramps are...
Yeah, it's similar to a heart attack. It can be as severe as a heart attack, yeah.
Why are we here?
So I'm glad I made it out. I'm glad I made it out. I feel like, people give birth because they're like, oh, I got to make this worthwhile. This like horrible time.
I've heard that,
I had.
For sure.
Yeah. Then I don't know what I'm doing. Just wasting my life.
Do you want babies?
No. I only want to take care of the adults in my life that I love. That's good enough.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Great.
My bestie. My rom-coms. I want to hold my rom-coms close. Nurture them.
Cute.
Make them good. Feel good. Daniel, what's happening with you?
That was just that you're in cramp mode?
I don't really... Everything else feels like it's not... I don't even remember other stuff that happened this week.
Okay. What is happening really boring and quick is that I have fully furnished my home now.
It's beautiful.
It looks great.
And I just want to say that I am very good at, like, being the person who's alone at IKEA.
Oh, that's a really...
That's good.
Rare skill.
Like, it's like, I got so many things, and I transported, and it was, like, heavy objects, and...
Do you have a car?
Yep.
Oh, that's useful.
And so it's like, I felt like it was, like, a very important skill, and I was, like, carrying all the heavy furniture from, like, my car up the stairs to my place, and, like, there's, like, 19 different doors to get through, and I was, like, one-handing and flipping open and kicking open, and I'm like, oh, I'm so good at, like... I just feel like there should be a championship of like IKEA solo shoppers.
Yeah, that's really good.
That's rare.
Also, the door opening stuff is that's like the skill of someone who's worked in retail for 20 years. You gotta like carry stuff, kick doors open, push some other shit
open,
out of the
and
way,
like unlock the door with
do
one
all
hand
that.
With keys.
Yeah, that's really impressive.
I wonder how many couples have had fights at IKEA.
This is a funny
two
thing
to
that
3 million.
Yeah, we. So me and
that's
Gabe,
how you two met.
Yeah. Me and Gabe have gone to IKEA like a million times in the past 2 months because we're hardcore nesting. And every experience we had was like, we were so excited and energized the entire time because we both we love organizing. So we just like, we went to IKEA in LA and we had the best time and we went early enough that like we bypassed all the traffic, and then as we were leaving we saw a couple just going in on each other before they were even walking through the door.
That's amazing.
And he was like, well, you said, and I was like, huh. And then we went to IKEA here And we had a similar experience where we got excited, felt energized, and like organized. And a couple was just like wanting to murder each other in the elevator down.
So you win the IKEA championships of solo and
I'm never going to win any award in my life.
That's not true.
I disagree. You're going to win so many.
But like, I feel like IKEA is the one where I'm like hoping that happens. But that's it. That's my what's happening. There's also a beautiful patio that we can check out afterwards that's completed.
I'm really excited to get out there. I saw it on Instagram. I wanted to abandon everything I was doing and just run over, sit there.
How far do you live?
I live downtown, so not super far. Close. Close enough.
Speaking of close enough.
Your transitions are so tight, Daniel. They're so tight.
I do feel like I want to like do a collection of clips of all of my transitions.
I would love that also.
The worst. Like as soon as somebody says anything, I'm like, speaking of.
No, I think it's good.
We're sitting.
Hydration.
We're letting him or her get watered up.
Watered up.
I apologize. I have to apologize that I still have some issues where I miss gender.
You don't have to. Okay.
But I just like wanted like I feel like I always feel
it's an adjustment. It's an adjustment for everyone. And listen, it's an adjustment for me half the time. I mean, I was saying this, but like half the time when people call me she, I'm like, ooh, who are you talking about?
Are you looking at me?
Yeah. No, not you.
I know. That's what I'm just being purposely confusing. Yeah.
But I didn't want to scan over it because I feel like that happens. And like, I feel like rather than the awkwardness of scanning over it, because it's happened with several friends. With Ivan Coyote, I've fucked it up a million times. And they're nice about it. But I just I think it's respectful to at least talk about it so that people have that remembrance of it.
Yeah.
I try to remember about how many times I've fucked up people's pronouns myself and use that to every time someone pronouns me, that's sort of what I try to remember is that, yep, I've been in those shoes too. And I still am.
Cool. Well, back to your book. Got that there.
Yeah.
I didn't know you wrote something.
Wow. Is this the first time you're opening it? You haven't even read the new version, have you?
No, I haven't.
Fair.
I scanned through it, though.
I don't listen to your podcast, so we're even.
Well, I've already read two versions of the book.
It's true, you have.
And
Daniel,
but it got better.
Sweating right now for how much. I know, because even when you sent the second version that you sent me, I was like, holy shit. I'm going to be very candid. I was just very surprised that somebody who jumped into poetry so recently and there's no, I mean, cause you also have songwriting in your background and it just felt so advanced.
That's so
nice. This was not to me a first book.
I agree.
This
when
was,
I
a third book
opened it up. Yeah. I was like, this is top shelf, debut collection stuff. It felt so clean. I mean, just language wise, it was fantastic.
And
was
even your rejection of how the page works, you were just doing next level shit, but on your first go.
Yeah. I think also though, the honesty with which you're writing and sort of the pointedness with
this
each
is the
individual
compliment
poem,
part of the podcast. Yeah,
that is definitely something that we always do. And it's pretty great. Compliment corner. But I think that level of sort of, obviously it's very personal to you and you felt a level of commitment to the content as well as the text. I think that's what it's speaking to for me.
Thank you so much. I mean, it means a lot from both of you, especially as poets. I mean, I've talked about this before, but I think that was my number one concern about the book was the craft. Especially as someone who's been saying I'm a newbie poet, although I forgot that actually when I started writing in junior high and high school, it was through poetry. And then I sort of abandoned it and moved into songwriting because it was if I sing these, then they become songs. But my first foray actually into writing, I totally forgot was poetry. I don't know if that counts, but either way, I think the thing that I really struggled with was craft, especially in poems about race, because I worried that the reader if they didn't like what I was saying, would be like, well, it's terribly written. This is a bad poem.
I mean, you know, that's going to happen no matter what.
Oh, of course, of course.
The people who do that, you could have a fine crafted poem and they'll find a reason to hate it just because they don't like the
content. Yeah, totally.
Sure. And I think that that's one of the things I've had to embrace about poetry particularly, or in particular, is that it, I think it's one arena where taste is very, very, very subjective, like more so than any other genre I've dabbled in.
Yeah.
I think that like what makes a good poem, like that's something that like I also really wrestled with, and it really varies, right? Like, you know, you've made recommendations. Lots of people made recommendations to me about books that they loved. And sometimes I really got it. And sometimes I was like, I really don't. Whereas like novels, I feel like are a little bit different. Like, right. I think
you're right. I think when you deal with narrative, there's something within that too, because we're so much more familiar with narrative structure.
Right.
Whereas with poetry, people overall, like readers of any type of book, are just less familiar with what poetry is or what it can be, which I also think is something that you do again in a first book. But yeah, you're, you know, pushing some boundaries in terms of like, what can a poem be and what can it do? And how can it be effective? And also, yeah, have all of these craft elements. Because you have a lot of found text
in
the book, which I love. I mean, Daniel and I are pretty big fans of all sorts of types of poetry. But yeah, we both, and not necessarily in our own work. Well, I guess in our own work.
No, I think we are drawn in our appreciation is people who choose variation.
Yes, definitely.
And that's what was interesting is that when you sent the text, I was like, oh, you're doing so many different forms. Usually a first book is definitely like people want to try and play with form a lot, but they play within kind of a safe realm of form. So it's like usually like, oh, like they're doing different styles of classic formal poetry, or they're doing different styles of sound poetry or whatever. And yours kind of, it went everywhere in a really good way.
Thanks again for saying that. Like, I mean, I think sometimes not knowing, like, I've never studied poetry. So, I mean, I would write a poem and Amber Dawn would be like, oh yeah, this is a structure poem, or this is a concrete poem. Like, I had no idea. Right. And knowing that there were terminology for what I was doing was very validating, especially in the first draft, because it was like, oh great, this is not, I'm not just pulling this out of my bum. Like, I can keep playing. Like, I really just tried to play with language a lot. And yeah, especially again in thinking about racism, I was like always trying to think about like what's the most effective way to write about racism, to write poetry about racism. And like the thing I kept coming back to is like a multiplicity of approaches, just like handling racism in general. I think you need to have a variety of different approaches. And so found poetry in particular became very useful, especially as a way to talk about experiences that weren't specifically mine. So even though the book is rooted in like personal, you know, I use found poetry to sort of point out racism in things like Oscar So White, or the incident with the white man who took the Asian poet's
name. Yeah.
And also how people respond to Kanye West. Like, these are all things that are not necessarily specific to me or my experience. And I really wrestled with like, how do I talk about anti-black racism as a non-black person?
Right.
And one of the things that really bothers me about Facebook is that like, well, there's lots of things, but like, but like when these conversations happen, there's like so many people that'll be like, that's not racist. Like, Kanye West is just an asshole. And like, or that's not racist. Like, I mean, in Oscar So White, like basically what I did was I literally streamlined the text, because I think people are always like, oh, it's about talent. It's about this. It's about that. And I see those conversations happen all the time.
It happens all the time.
And it, to me, as a person of color, it's so racially coded. Like you want to talk about, you want to make your meme about like Beck plays like 15 instruments and Beyonce had 20 writers to write one song. Like, that's racist.
Yeah.
Like, so I wanted to use found poetry as a way to really, really, really highlight those things, and also to not project my own voice, because I'm not a black person. I can't and I'm not Asian either. I can't speak on behalf of that person, but to use text to just highlight the racism already in the text.
Totally makes sense. Cause then you're also addressing something that's with those particular pieces, like something that's in the public realm, and especially things that are pop culture related, which I think people see so much more often and then can relate to as well, because they're familiar with it and you're flipping the text by coding it completely differently from the intended, from like when it came out of those, you know, people's mouths, like completely reversing their commentary. And there's a little index at the back where you're like, you know, you're like, this is who said this and this is where this came from. So people can actually see part of your process within the book as well.
Totally. Well, yeah. I mean, in fairness, I was like genuinely inspired by both of you and your book. Like, I think it really alleviated a lot of pressure I felt in terms of like entering into the poetry realm, because of, again, I think the range of things that you both do in your poetry, how contemporary it is, how playful it is, that you use pop culture. Like, these are all things that I really care about as a writer, but in writing about racism, it's so serious, right? That it's like, how do I like still have quote unquote fun with the genre? How do I talk about important issues, but that's not in a didactic way? And I think pop culture is like a wonderful way to, you know, like to talk about these issues more directly, because let's face it, that's how these issues are coming up, is not necessarily through like, I feel like conversations about racism, you know, obviously they can center around like, you know, police carding and police brutality, but I feel like they also happen in like in pop culture, but they're not read as racist, you know? So, and that's something I really wanted to challenge too, is just like, how do we talk about systemic racism? Because I think most people don't think they're racist because they're like, well, shit, I haven't called anyone Paki. I haven't used the N-word. I haven't like beat anyone. Kind of like how most people don't think they're homophobic.
Those are like really low level.
Yeah. But like most people, like, you know, I do anti-homophobia training. It's like, if I were to ask any of them, like, do you think you're homophobic? They'd be like, well, you know, I didn't call anyone faggot and I haven't pushed anyone and I have a gay friend. So most people don't think they're racist. And so how do you talk about systemic racism though? How do you talk about the fact that like in the literary community, like, you know, panel after panel will be white? Or how do you talk about the Grammys? How do you talk about, you know, like the hip hop category, you know, having a white person win, you know, how do you talk about those things, you know? So I don't know.
Yeah. I think, it's been interesting to see people finally like pick apart, well, people have been doing it for Canadian literature for a while, but like seeing it on a broader scale, people picking apart how white it is. And it's like, it's surprising to me that Canadian literature is so like, all the awards are still always so white and the nominations are always so white. And you're like, we're so diverse.
There's no excuse for it, honestly. Sorry to interrupt you. There's like zero excuse in like, not to be like, Justin, but like it's 2016. Like literally there's no excuse for that sort of thing to happen. And there's also no excuse for a token. Like, you know, cause I mean, there's one, I don't want to name names, but like there's one particular institution where like award after award after award, it'll be like three white people. I mean, three people and one will be a person of color. The two people are white, but it's like for a year I watched their lists and it was like literally like 10 different awards that came out and two of them were white and the one brown person. Of course they put the brown person in the middle in their like image, but still it's like, why is this happening? Like, how is this happening? Especially like in major cities too, right? Like, you know, when I'm in Toronto and like events like that take place, I'm like, I don't know.
No, I completely agree. And I also wonder, like, why does no one consider that part of it, like that they also as a white person are just taking up so much space, and it's because they're used to it. They have no reference point for not taking up that space or for not being acknowledged or not recognized. There's no, their brains are just like, I don't know.
Yeah. It's nice.
This is how it goes.
It's nice to see that a lot of the literary magazines have been like kind of taking up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and especially like from your response, your kind of call to action, that was on All Lit Up.
Yeah, All Lit Up, yeah.
And you,
what was it called? 1919?
13 ways to diversify your press.
Yeah, and so like you, instantly there was presses changing their call for submissions.
Yeah, I saw that, which was incredible.
A bunch of literary magazines switched, like made themes over the. I've seen it in the next couple of years that their themes have all been, heavily focused on race, which is nice. The thing that, and Satchi actually brought this up online where she was like, I'm worried about what, this is me being a weirdo, thematically having issues be about a set race and thing versus like just
it being integrated.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've had people openly say to me that like diversity is really popular right now, you know, like, and like, or, you know,
diversity is so hot right
now. It's such a cool trend and everyone's into it.
And it's terrifying, right? Like I agree. Like I do think that there are conversations that are happening, which are great. These conversations have happened before. They just might not have had the same visibility that they're having right now too. But yeah, when people say things to me like that, I'm like, oh, like, is this just, of course I want to give people the benefit of the doubt. Like the fact that like, you know, the literary communities are responding in this way is great, but I also worry about it. Like being, is it a gesture that we're committing to? This is one of the things I talked about in that article on All Lit Up, mm-hmm. is that like the work for changing your submission process, this is like, you don't just change your submission process and then, oh, well, we didn't get anything. So then you change it back. Like the work of, you know, quote unquote inclusivity or diversification or whatever word you want to use. It's an ongoing process. Yeah. Right. And so, yeah, I think it's great that there are certain issues dedicated to diversity or race. But I think we need to see more than that too. And
yeah, there have to be long-term like goals for organizations, for presses, for magazines, whatever it is. It can't just be some, what they're like, that's so trendy.
Well, and that was a thing that like in Poetry Dead, the rule always was inclusivity. And so I always spent whenever I was editing the issue, spent a lot of time being like, is there enough, am I reaching enough varied voices in whatever
capacity
that I could. And then that included even trying to get work from people who were dealing with low income and homelessness who couldn't afford to even get the postage or have an email account.
Mm.
And then having guest editors, I've had to be constantly like, keep this in mind. And I've had them come back with work where I said, I don't feel like this is varied enough. And I've had that a few times where I said, I don't think you've reached enough voices. I need you to go.
And how do they respond?
Usually pretty good. I had one resistance, which I hated, and I was so tired and I like was like, I can't fix your problem. And I'm like, so I'm just going to let it go to press. But it's like, that's going to have to be on you. If you are called out for this, this is on you. I gave you the info. I pushed you twice on this and that's fine. And it was like, that one was specifically to do with like, I wanted more voices of low income in that respect. And the issue was still great. And it's frustrating to have that response.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's challenging. Like when I did a talk first, it was like a midwinter fair or something for small presses in Canada. And that's where that article came across from. And, you know, one of the things that came up was just like, well, we don't want to make assumptions about people, like when they're submitting, you know, how do we know? And these sorts of things. And I think it's like valid, right? Like we were, before the podcast, we were talking about like the dangers of quote unquote checking off boxes and where are the lines? Like how many people do you have to include? I guess for me, like, I still don't feel like we're at the point, at least when I think about race, like I don't think we're at the point where we're checking off enough boxes,
yeah.
You know? So, yeah.
And not enough people are doing it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and like, the onus, like, I mean, it's great to hear that like you as an editor, like that's the work the editors should be doing, you know, like that's ideally we lived in a world where like editors in general were doing that kind of work, you know? But I think the problem is that like most people don't think about it. Like when I was in this room doing this talk, it was all small presses and like 95% of the people in that room were white. And I was like, how do you think this happens? Do you think this is just magic that like all the people who run small presses in Canada are white? Like, is this just a coincidence that this, I mean, I didn't say that out loud and now I'm saying it here, but you know what I mean? It's like, and you know, it's not a criticism of them as people. Like I know a lot of the people, but it's just like, I think that there's always a sort of resistance to this conversation. And it's like, but like, yeah. look around.
Yeah.
I've been to like 5 parties in Toronto, which is more than I ever do in 2 months. And almost every time I've been one of the only brown people in the room. And I'm like, how is this possible? Like, how is this possible in downtown Toronto?
Yeah.
And at some point it feels deliberate, right? Like, I don't think anyone says like, I'm going to choose only white friends. But like, I just feel like you'd have to work very, very hard for you to like have an event and have only white people there. Like in downtown Toronto, like there's no no public space is like that.
Also, if you're programming or you're editing or whatever it is you're doing, it's not just for the most part one person that's doing that. Like there are other people.
Exactly.
So for several people to be like, this looks good. No issues here. Moving forward. Is that makes it a bigger deal to like not, you know, have one person even within that organization or group or whatever it is, acknowledge that that's what's happening.
Totally. At the same time, I feel like I never want to talk about racism again.
Fair enough. I mean, you wrote this book,
like,
so people.
Like, I'm like, I'm done. Here's
just be
my
like,
book.
Read my fucking book. Yeah. All right, I wrote this. I also just don't understand people not feeling shitty about themselves for like doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
I don't get that. Like,
no, I feel so
I mean,
much
I'm always feeling
time.
Shitty about being, doing whatever I've done. I'm like, oh, you made so many fucking mistakes.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you? So maybe everyone needs to just have a little bit more shame.
That's what I honestly feel that way. Like sometimes I'm like, God, my mom gave me so much shame, but I'm like, you know, having that shame has done good things for me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, a lot of people could use a healthy dose of shame.
Yeah. And if you're balancing it out
have
with some
no
level
shame?
Of confidence, yeah. Yes. Have you no shame? You guys, you can go read my first book. I have a whole thing about how to feel more shame. Please read it.
Great.
It'll help
What's
you.
What's it called?
I have a section in my first book, Coping with Emotions and Otters, about how to feel different emotions.
Okay.
And I have one on how to feel shame and how to feel guilt. Yeah.
Great.
How to feel angry, sad.
I don't need to read this book.
Yeah. You're a pro. You're fine. I'm just maybe telling some other people
right, yes.
that are unaware
These guys
of their already. Shame, their shame feelings. Please feel bad about yourselves. Bye.
Yeah. I guess I'm surprised when people don't feel shame. I'm just like that's like a yeah. selfish thought in the sense that like everyone I assumed felt as much shame as I did at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And then when there was like people who didn't, I was like, oh, this is why nobody likes you. Like,
yeah.
But I mean, it's also privilege, right? Like
of
I think that
is.
Like the absence of shame is often tied to privilege. It's like not having to worry, not having to think about somebody else or not having to think about, yeah, whatever it might be.
Well, we also talked about just the idea of people pleasing.
Right.
And I think that that comes with it too. There are the people who are constantly like, you know, you need to pay attention to me. And this is the way that I'm going to get that attention by being complacent or by putting someone else in a comfortable position and like going into whatever mode that is, as opposed to, yeah. And I mean, of course people get exhausted. It's tiring to be like, I'm mad all the time and things are unfair. And people are ignoring me. And then your voice gets tiny and tiny and tiny and tiny. And then you're like, fuck. Just whatever you want. What is that? Do you want that? Okay, I'll help you. I'll do that. Great. Cool. Okay, I'll be over here in the corner now that I've given you whatever it is that you wanted. No? Anyone? Okay, cool. Maybe we should stop recording and I can just go have a nap.
Yeah, just go have a nap. Let Mark Ruffalo out.
Or not.
No, I'm keeping him.
That's fair. I'd keep him too.
He's so little now. I just carry him around.
I feel like since we've had such a heavy discussion, should we lighten things up for a moment?
Okay.
At all?
Sure, yeah. Let's
I mean,
lighten
not
it up.
We can. Lighten. We can darken things. See the color? See, I'm already feeling shame about like the
Racist.
Talk. See?
No, it's okay.
Great work.
Once I was in like a conference, and I used the term black sheep, which I know is racially coded, but the person that pointed out to me in a white room was a white person. She was like, I just don't get why you're using that term. And I mean, I get that it's racially coded, but when white people point out racism to you, I don't know. I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah, well, your suspicions seem valid.
Yeah. Cool house.
Yeah.
I've been really questioning panels lately. I don't know if that's fair for me to say. Maybe
no,
we can
go
edit
for it.
This out.
I mean, everything's fair for you to say. If you want us to cut it out, you can tell us later.
I've just had like a couple of really bad experiences, and I just, yeah, like who enjoys panels? Like, genuinely, who enjoys them? Do people enjoy
I feel
them?
There are people that genuinely don't. Love them, though.
Yes. I'm not talking about being on them. Like, as an audience, do audience people enjoy listening to panels?
I feel like they enjoy the part where they get to ask questions, a.k.a. just say a bunch of stuff they've built up comments. In their head for an yeah. hour.
That's, to me, the scariest part. Like, panels I enjoy in, like, the sense that I kind of just want to hear people talk about stuff for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm so used to listening to people read their work, and it's like a lot of times I just want to hear them talk around their work, and then right. I'll read their work.
Right.
And then the worst part of the panels are when they're like, let's have a Q&A, and it's like, don't. Like, there's never been a Q&A where I've been like, well, we really all feel enlightened from that.
Oh, so you don't like Q&A.
I hate the Q&A.
Interesting.
Because it always brings about like somebody being like, well, I feel that, and you're like, no. Like,
well, one of the things I did with this book, unlike the other two books when I toured them, So God Loves Hair and She of the Mountains, this book I did no Q&A. Like, and partly deliberately because I was thinking about the emotional work of putting out a book on
yeah.
racism.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking about the emotional work of, like, performing from a book about racism.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking about taking questions after. And I was like, no, I'm just not going to do Q&A.
Yeah. Because I feel like it's what needs to happen the most here is just listening. Just like listening and understanding. You've put the work in and you've put a lot of thought around all of this. And it's like, this is a listening moment. And for the audience to go back and wrestle with these questions. There's nothing more that you're going to have of answers because you've already put them in here.
I don't, like, aside from what I just said, I actually like Q&A. Like, ugh. I find it, I enjoy, like, Q&A because at least it feels a little bit directed.
Do you enjoy, like, when you are the...
I don't
air?
Like, yeah, when I'm being asked the question, but listening, if I'm going to see a guest and then there's Q&A, I always leave during the Q&A for that reason.
But I kind of feel that way too. Like, I don't mind if people want to ask me questions,
right.
But if I have to sit in an awkward room where it's just like,
no, I never stay.
Oh, it definitely is weird. And I've moderated panels and you can't do anything. You just have to stay there
yeah.
the whole time. You're the one that's like... I have told people that their questions were not good. I was like, no, we're not going to answer that.
Wow.
Well, sometimes you got to say it. Because, man, not everyone's questions are valid. I'll be like, that was just an opinion about a bunch of stuff. Great. You over there. Give me something else.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to sound ungrateful because, like, I obviously, like, it's nice to be invited to be on panels.
Of course.
But I just, like, I wonder sometimes how effective they are. Like, what the intention behind a panel is.
Don't you find also it's interesting with so many other things that are performative or where you're together with other artists or people, whoever it is that you happen to be doing an event with, you a lot of times get together beforehand. Like if you're performing music or whatever you're doing with a panel, you just all show up and you're completely independent of each other.
Yep, totally.
Gonna say whatever comes into your brain. Oh, that's nothing.
Actually,
sorry.
That's the one part of a panel I like because I often get to meet other writers that I typically don't
I like
always.
That
so
part
like
of
yesterday
it too.
I was on a panel with Mariko Tamaki and like I've never met her, even though like we're in the same sort of
was
circles.
That, was that great?
It was great. Yeah,
she
it was awesome.
So great,
yeah. Yeah. So it's just like I like those parts, but I think also sometimes on a panel people feel pressure to respond similarly to each other. Like I'm always telling people like the best thing you can do is disagree with a panelist because that's going to make the most interesting listening experience to the yeah. audience. People don't want to, I assume people don't want to just listen to a bunch of people agree. I think it's best that if we have different opinions, but I think often when you're on a panel and you want to be respectful to your peers and
yes.
the people next to you and you don't know them because you just showed up and you were just introduced to them, people tend to like agree a lot. I also like am really fan of the passing. Like I think that like a lot of panelists feel like they have to answer every question and sometimes the person next to you did a really good job and you don't really have any or maybe you don't want to answer that question. Maybe you don't have anything you
or yeah,
have
it's
to
not
say.
Relevant or
pass.
You haven't thought about it. Yeah.
Just pass.
No, fair enough. Not everyone has to
also just yell pass.
It. Yeah.
I have
it's
done
like
that.
When you're riding a bike and you're like on your left, just be like that. You're like, boop, here we go. Moving around. Getting out.
Panels.
Is that what this is? A panel?
Everything's a panel.
Great.
Okay, so Dina, why don't you play us that game?
You want to play the game?
Yeah.
And then
we'll rage minute. Okay. Yeah, we need a breather.
All right.
Like,
okay. I think I have it all in here.
Did this get really boring? Did I make it boring by talking about panels?
It was not boring.
But
at
also,
all.
It's funny that your like instant response is like a guilt or shame
right.
of like being
yeah.
boring.
That's why you're
putting
so
a
great.
Ribbon on it.
That's why I respect you.
This is good. Like, this is a question that I have. Do you do your own nails or do you get your nails done?
Ooh, fun question.
That is a great question. I am really obsessed with people's nails because mine are made of garbage and I'm fascinated.
So when I started wearing nail polish, it was me. And I would get nail polish like all over like my knuckles,
right.
My wrists, like
course.
Just like especially the just left hand. Like it was just, yeah, like it's just.
It's very difficult.
Amber Dawn, Vancouver writer, hero and friend.
Former guest.
Former.
Friend of the podcast.
Yeah. Do we know what episode number?
No.
Five or something. Oh, really early on.
Young episode. She gets her nails done. And so we had this whole conversation and it's like, I don't know, it's like $20 plus tip is like $25. Mine lasts for about 2 weeks and they look like candy.
No, they look insanely beautiful.
Mine, if I did this, it would not look this nice.
No, they look-
so it's just like, just pay the money.
She also was always telling me, just pay the money.
It's honestly, you don't regret it. You don't regret it. And like you're forced to, I'm also not a patient person. So when I do it myself, then I'm like, okay, time to send emails, time to hang up clothes, time to like make a smoothie.
That's me
and then
too.
Like, it's like the, you know, first I've already got like paint on the knuckle and now suddenly there's like paint on my like face. And so when you go to a place, they don't let you leave.
And they make you stay.
They make you stay. They give you a little vent. Sometimes they spray your fingers with like a little almond oil, which makes it accelerate. Like
beautiful.
It's just, yeah.
Yeah.
But, and then they look like this. And honestly, I often think about how the person, speaking of joy, the person who invented nail polish really just cared about joy. Because it's
sure.
such a superfluous thing, yeah, right?
It
like it's so unnecessary, but it makes me so happy. Like it's just this like 10 little skittles of color that you just see, you know?
It's great.
It's joyful. What
it
a
is.
Joyful human being, whoever that was. Yeah. Thank you, nail polish inventor.
Good job.
I got a new nail polish of, it's like, I feel like it's a, you can see it, it's on my toes. It's like a gentle, it's like a gentle gray with a little purpley-ish color.
I got a mint toe right now. Keep it fresh.
Fresh and minty.
Oh, mint.
Yeah.
I remember getting them done. I was just like, this is the greatest experience ever.
Pedicures are even better because then they scrub your foot and all those flakes
they
fly
use
off.
That shaver thing
and
to
like
really get the,
of your
the
foot
bad...
fall off. And then your foot feels amazing.
Yeah,
after.
It's so great. I like a sugar scrub.
Ooh.
Sugar scrubs are the best.
We did
that
this,
is one of
like,
my faves.
Special candle wax one, which was very pricey, but they basically put your leg in warm, like in a giant stocking of warm wax.
No, I want
and
that.
Your feet feel like a baby's
bottom derriere
for like a week.
A derriere de bébé.
Like tenderness on levels you've never known. More
That's
tender,
baby ass soft.
Yes.
I want that. Because I got to stand so much at work, so my feet are always just...
Treat yourself.
Feeling
at
real
At least once.
Rough. Yeah, I'm going to try that. It sounds so beautiful.
The thing that I just thought of is there was this article that I was ranting about where it was about how like 2016 is going to be like, is this the year that men are going to wear shorts? And I was like, what's happening? I was like... In my head, I'm like, I thought like 2016 was like the year of like the man crop top. And I was like, oh, I'm like jumping far. And I was just like,
That was last year, wasn't it? In Gay World?
In Gay World was last year, but I was like, now straight world has to follow suit. But it's like, I was jumping way far ahead and I forgot.
I thought it was like, the year of like the, like a romper.
That's the year I want.
That's what I
that's
want.
That's what I've been focusing on.
I mean, I want that forever.
I
want
to find a male romper. And it just made me like so sad for like. Straight men where you're like, oh, you like can't even wear shorts without feeling gay.
I admittedly was very anti shorts for most of my 20s, and a big part of it is because I hadn't been exposed to the fashion short. I've only like it was like the only shorts I knew. Keep in mind I grew up in Alberta,
right?
But like we're like the giant khaki cargo shorts.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I just was like, why would you wear that if you could wear like a nice skinny jean? Like it just didn't really make sense to me, even in the heat. I was one of those like jean wearers like religiously, and then I turned 30 and I realized about my body in general that like this is as good as it's going to get. So if I'm going to show...
It's an important revelation.
Yeah. Like I was just like, well, and in terms of my legs, I was like, well,
I'm going to show them now or never. Like, I don't know. And like, and it was around the same time that like I discovered like European shorts or whatever. Yeah. And like every year now they just get shorter and shorter and shorter.
Well, yeah. You're going to love this game we're going to play.
Ooh.
I can't imagine.
Did I make a good
segue? Yeah, it was really good.
I'm still talking about shorts.
Oh, sorry. I was unaware.
I can't imagine that there was a time where I didn't wear shorts.
Wait, so you came full circle. No, you came 180.
Yeah.
And now embrace shorts completely.
Like I don't really like the summer, but I love wearing shorts. And part of it also is like, as someone who presents a lot of the time as male, if I'm like not wearing makeup, like shorts are the closest thing to a skirt for me. Like, it's like, you know, like if I want to be able to let her breathe.
Yeah. Yeah. Letting the air in. Letting it flow.
I love shorts.
Letting it flow.
Yeah. The tinier, the better. And like, yeah, I just feel like the summer is going to be a great short season.
I agree.
Says GQ magazine.
It was also like a very like progressive site. So I was just very confused. And also that
Us
it was like
weekly.
Do one sentence where it was like, do one sentence where like by men we mean straight like men, not queer or like.
Who up to now have been terrified of wearing shorts.
Like it's like who.
But yeah, I genuinely feel sympathetic because I think that maybe it's not even about like comfortability, but more just like if you go into the Gap and look at shorts, I wouldn't want to wear those either.
Do you think it's an ugly short problem?
Yeah, I think it's
the proliferation of ugly shorts.
Yeah.
I have to be honest. The only time I wear shorts is when I wear a romper.
Cute.
Because I find wearing shorts, I'm not that good at.
Well, you don't want to trap Mark Ruffalo too much.
Yeah, I don't want to keep suffocate him with my shorts. I don't know why I find shorts difficult. I like them and I want to be able to wear them. I tried to wear some jorts yesterday. Some little jorts cutoffs, but I couldn't really do it.
We covered so much ground.
I know. Yeah.
Are we done?
Almost.
We have
two things. Okay, you ready? This is called Mad, Sad, or Glad Summer Theme.
Okay.
So we're going to go rapid fire. I'm going to list things and you're going to say if they make you mad, sad, or glad.
Just me?
Oh, both of you.
Okay.
I might chime in.
Okay.
Okay. Ice cream.
Glad.
Glad.
Barbecue.
Glad.
Neutral.
There's no neutral, is there?
You can be neutral.
Okay, glad.
Okay.
Halloumi cheese.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Mass market paperback novels.
Still glad.
Glad.
Okay. Beaches.
Mad.
Ooh.
I fucking hate the sand. Oh. There's no internet on the beach. Okay, go on.
Sometimes there is.
There's no what?
At English Bay, there is.
Oh, yeah. We, like, got internet on all the beaches here now.
Okay. Short shorts.
Oh, glad.
Yeah.
Very glad.
Glad. Swimwear.
Still very glad.
Glad.
Okay. I
feel like you're not putting any mad or sad.
Convertibles.
Sad.
Me too. So sad.
Sad?
I don't like them.
I don't know.
I don't feel like there's a good use for them. And it's
agreed.
Usually like the people in them make me sad.
Just yeah, that's true.
Straight up cars
no,
overall kind of made me sad. Yeah,
someone
mad.
In a convertible yesterday on the highway was like tailgating me the whole time.
Rude.
It's
rude.
Like you're supposed to be chill. You've got a convertible.
Your roof is off.
Yeah.
Your hair is blowing.
Yeah, you have enough money to buy a car that
you
doesn't
have hair.
That is a removable top.
Yeah.
Come on. Motorcycles.
Glad. Oh, I'm new with mad.
I'm mad too. I don't like them.
They're so loud.
But I think of, oh yeah.
Little mopeds are fine. Motorcycles are not cool.
Oh.
Oh, that's great. Dykes on bikes, glad.
It's the best part of Pride.
That is true.
So great. I agree. Aside from dykes on bikes, every other motorcycle stuff, super annoying.
True. Why is masculinity so loud?
Oh, calm down.
Why is it so just.
Yeah. The convertibles, the bikes.
Yeah.
Those big inflatables that you can put in the water.
Oh.
And like float in.
See, I feel neutral about
sad.
That.
Sad? That's too much?
I'm a never nude, so I don't go publicly. Oh.
Okay, that's too much. Okay.
Fair enough. I'm just going to go to glad because I feel like I feel enough happiness about being near a pool.
Yeah, I feel super glad. I would like
But I don't like being in those.
I want to be in one and I want to have just nonstop drinks. Vapes.
What's a vape?
Like a vape pen. And
then, like the smoking from like an electric cigarette.
Mad.
sad again.
Hammocks.
Oh, glad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I go glad.
Hammocks are great. Beach balls.
Glad.
I feel like mad because they always hit me. I feel like that's like always the ball that hits me and I don't like it.
Oh, yeah. I'm mad too. I don't know what to do with them.
What's worse, beach ball or frisbee?
Both.
Frisbee.
I feel like a frisbee's more targeted.
I know how to.
I can't throw a frisbee, so it makes me so mad.
Lake.
Glad.
Ocean.
Glad.
Sunglasses.
Oh, glad.
So glad.
Glad. I never
Most of these
them,
things
though.
Are great.
Yeah, this is my year of sunglasses.
Oh.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Did you get some
Well, no, ones I, that you love? I always wear sunglasses, but like usually it's like only in a like I'm not religious about them. Like I don't like always have them on me.
Right.
Like even if it's slightly late. Like let's say I'm leaving the house at 5 o'clock, I'm like, well, then I'm gonna need to carry them and you know the sun's gonna set by 7, but this is the year where like I always wanna have the sunglasses on me.
Oh, so you're making a conscious choice.
Yeah, that's what it's about.
I usually have 2 pairs in my purse because it seems like the right amount. Just in case. What if I lose one?
Right. I had like, because I clearly lost my last one. And I always wear glasses. Today I'm wearing contacts. And so I think this year I'm going to buy prescription sunglasses.
Ooh.
So that I always can just switch back and forth.
Nice.
That is what I want to do. I need my job to pay for prescription sunglasses for me, even though I don't have eyeglasses.
I like the freedom of contacts and glasses. Because then if I get tired of the sunglasses, I can give them to somebody and then buy another pair.
Yeah, that's all good.
Wait, I had a follow-up question. Nail art. Have you done nail art yet?
I haven't. I want someone to do it for me.
Same. But I feel like...
But I'm also like kind of like a monotone person. Or monochrome.
But there was these really cool ones that I saw. There was like half glossy, half matte. Very simple.
Oh, just like the geometric type.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. Those
it's
are
like,
nice.
How much does that cost?
It's not going to be that much more expensive.
Yeah, it's not.
I don't feel like that's true. I feel like well done.
It should be worth more.
Be like hundreds.
Ask Amber Dawn where she goes. She just went and got, last time I saw her, they were like geometric shapes, different colors. And then there, I think maybe also was jewels on
Guys,
them.
Guys, I love Amber Dawn so much.
I know. This is the Amber Dawn.
I'm so happy to
corner.
Be in the same city with Amber Dawn. Like, even if I don't see her until tonight, I'm just like, Amber Dawn, we're in the same city.
It's a great thing. We're very lucky.
That's how I met you, actually. This would not have happened without Amber Dawn.
Yeah. I read for your God Loves Hair.
Yeah, for my God Loves Hair. My first Vancouver reading for my first book you read.
Yeah.
You were so different.
I was
so different too. Yeah. Yeah. We were all so shy and young.
Yeah. I feel like me and you were quite shy and had different ways of approaching it with each other.
Yeah.
And like Amber Dawn was just Amber Dawn and chill and happy.
Yeah. I was convinced that you hated me.
I thought you didn't like my reading.
Oh, why did you think that?
Just because, like, I thought...
Someone is hypersensitive.
Well, at that time I was. And, like, because it was all my first time reading things. Oh. And I just assumed nobody liked my readings as soon as they were done. Like, I just, in my head, was like, nobody liked that reading. Because I, like, could not say Christina Aguilera. And I kept fumbling over
oh,
it.
Oh, God, I
like,
don't even remember that.
Everyone thinks I'm a ding-dong.
No, I didn't think that at all.
Yeah. But then we worked it out.
It's true.
We found out we both had no idea what we were doing, like, did, like in respect to our feelings.
Yes.
I'm glad you guys worked this out.
We did.
Even though you'd already worked it out before.
Yeah.
This is a good callback.
TBT.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Do you need a
okay,
rage
I'm ready.
Minute?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay.
I have my rage things.
So for her rage minute, I give her 1 minute on my phone and then we use the, I think it's the Sencha is the...
Yep. No, that's right. That's the correct
the
tone.
Theme song.
You came up with it. You ready?
Dun, 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 dun. I can't
so, so happy.
My, okay. 1 minute. You ready?
Sure.
You afraid to be witness to this?
No, I'm so excited.
Okay.
I'm so excited.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, go.
Police horses. They're even more disgusting than regular horses. They're so scary. And there's a person with a gun on top of it. And I can't. It makes me so
it smells like poo.
Stressed out.
Pooping.
It stinks terrible. Oh, my God. Underwear with a crotch that is like a dime's width thick. Do people have invisible crotches? Why do they make these underwear? They are so tiny. People want to cover their crotches. That's why they're wearing underwear. It should be thicker than that. Oh my God, James Bond. I can't with that fucking shit. The fact that people constantly write think pieces and care about it infuriates me nonstop. Oh, you're going to pay someone a bunch of money to write another movie about a rich white guy who has tons of fancy gadgets, and you're going to hire another rich white guy to play him again and just be like a misogynistic, sexist piece of shit. I don't care. It's enough. It's so boring. It's been boring for a long time. Ian Fleming is dead. I don't care about this at all. My own feelings this week, they're terrible.
And that's been another Rage Great. Minute with Dina Delbecchia.
I still have some more Rage things saved up.
Okay. Keep those for next time. I do want to say that I always thought women's vaginas were so tiny because of those underwear.
I've never seen those
This
before.
Is a new problem, I feel. Everywhere you go now to buy underwear, the crotch is so narrow. I don't understand
tiny
this.
Triangles.
They're not even like G-strings or thongs. They're just...
Oh, I get what
like
you mean.
Like the crotch piece, the gusset is tiny as fuck. Yeah. And I don't understand why that's a thing. No. People, if I didn't want it to be covered up, I would just not wear them. Or I would I don't even know. It's really terrible.
The other thing is, why can't they just do a Bond film just like about the Judi Dench character?
I don't, maybe they could.
Like just that boss. Like how does she become a boss?
I don't know.
She's clearly the most interesting part of that.
Oh, like origin story?
Yeah.
Of like how she got there?
Guys, I know that you have your own like brand selfies, but like I've already staged a selfie for us.
Oh my God.
For my brand.
I'm very excited.
I just want to put that.
That's no, I'm exciting. Really excited. This is.
We'll still do your brand
you
selfies.
You were the first person to come in with their
but I have,
own.
Yeah. I've staged.
Everyone else
selfies.
Is always like, oh,
so
we have
great.
To take a photo.
Yeah.
Oh no.
They're not into it.
Why do you think I said yes?
We do advertise as the podcast of swearing, snacks, and selfies.
Okay. So, we should get.
We have one more question for you before you leave.
Oh, right.
Oh, first we have to say we're.
You can get us on iTunes, Stitcher. We're at canada.ca.
We're on Facebook.
Twitter, Facebook. Search it up.
Search it up. Also, no one has been sending us anything about jumpsuits or rompers. Please hashtag canlit jumpsuit or canlit romper. Send us your ideas, especially for Daniel. He really needs a romper this summer.
Yep.
Vivek, where can people find you online?
I can't with... Oh.
First, wait.
I jumped the
That's
gun.
Okay. You were ready and I liked it.
Okay. VivekShraya.com, VivekShraya.com or at VivekShraya, VivekShraya. At with the at sign before on Twitter and Instagram.
Yep. Both of those things are super worthwhile. Yep. Great Instagram, great Twitter.
Great
you're definitely in the top canlit Twitters.
Oh yeah.
And Instagrams for sure.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
Did you All say right. canlit or cantlit?
Canlit.
Okay.
You're in the you're in the cantlit canon now though, because you've been on the show.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you ready to tell us what you can't with?
I can't. With like little kids in first class. Like they don't even know. Like they don't even know that they're in first class. They don't even need the leg room. They don't even need the special snacks. They don't need any of that stuff. But like, yeah, just like if you as an adult want to have first class, it's one thing. But that kid, just send them back.
Yeah, they're not. What are they getting? Cocktails? No. They don't appreciate anything.
That's how I feel about that.
That's really hilarious and I love it.
I was
on
a plane.
Do they get a toy
at all? Nope. I don't know. Probably. Probably.
They like,
probably get like...
Pokemon?
I don't know.
What
I
do
guess
kids
they
like?
Pay the same price too.
I don't
With
even know.
With their tiny baby wallets.
Yeah, they both.
Their tiny credit cards.
It's like when kids... I see kids on like family trips, like little kids though. It's like when like you take your little kid to Paris. It's like, really? Your kid is not going to remember this. Like, why are you taking your kid to Paris when they're five?
At five, they might remember.
They won't.
I don't remember any of the trips we went on. Before 8 years old, I feel like.
Exactly.
I just remember seeing photos.
And even then, I feel like a kid, if you were just like, oh, we're going to blah, blah, and it's just like the park, they wouldn't know. Like they wouldn't know
anymore. Oh, it's like on Saturday Night Live, they used to have that deep thoughts thing, and it would be like, Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy, and one of them was about someone taking their kids to Disneyland, but they just drove and drove and drove until they went to an old abandoned burnt out warehouse. And
exactly.
It was like, oh no, Disneyland burnt down.
Exactly.
They cried and cried, but I knew deep down they were okay. I was like, yeah, perfect. That seems fine.
Speaking of SNL, with these mics, I kind of feel like Molly Shannon.
Oh, yeah, oh, like Delicious Dish.
Is that what it was called?
Yeah, they would talk about baking and like crafts. And
but they had the radio mics in front of them and they talked very slowly. Hi. To see you today.
Yeah, that's delicious.
That's great.
All right, let's all say delicious and goodbye.
Okay, on three.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3.
Delicious.
Goodbye.